here we are, Rock to Recovery Radio. I decided to start talking sooner. I used to let the music go on. I'm like, people are probably bored of that same riff after all these shows. So this is Rock to Recovery Radio. I am your host, Wes Gear. We are on KX93.5 FM, Laguna's only FM, Human Crafted Radio. And this is also brought to you by our friends from New Vista Behavioral Health. Great program, all throughout California, mental health, addiction, et cetera, et cetera. And they've been cool enough to help support our show from the very beginning, before even if they knew we were cool or not. So why are we here? I always like to kind of explain the purpose and point of this whole show. You know, I'm a sober dude. I'm super passionate about recovery. And we lose people all the time, every day, every week, constantly. Mental health, suicide, addiction, overdoses, eating disorders, etc. So for me, in my recovery, it's become kind of a passion and part of my life's work to help carry the message of recovery, not just the mess, but the message. And the message is that you're not alone, that there is a way out, that you're not too sick to recover from whatever it is, PTSD, TBI. People have had it worse than you, better than you, whatever, and have made it out. But not just to make it out. This isn't just about survival, like, okay, man, I didn't die. It's about getting into the vortex of radness. That's what I like to call it. It's that place we get in our recovery when we start applying these tools that we learn from our predecessors and the people that show us the way that actually make it so not only are we overcoming our addiction or our battles, whatever they may be, but we have this life that we live in a way that just makes us high, naturally, mind you. And if you've seen anybody in recovery that has good recovery, they're happy. And it's kind of weird when you're brand new to see that. Like, what? You don't drink and you're that happy? What's going on with you? So we interview celebrities, rock stars, rad humans, whoever. Whoever we think is going to be awesome on the show. So this guy, this gentleman, I've been so excited about. So I got to set him up, and I'm going to try not to talk another 20 minutes. For many of us in recovery, we have this daily routine. We have these spiritual tools that we use, and that's how we recover, doing the same thing every day. And a lot of us read. You know, we take the morning time for prayer, meditation, daily readings to get centered and focused. And we share those readings. You know, there's a number of them. I'm sure a lot of you out there know about many of them. I won't list them. And in my travels, actually through Bumble, I might as well just be honest, I met a gal, and it's funny, the law of attraction, she happened to be trying to recover herself. And we were talking about, what was it that I was saying? The law of attraction. Oh.
Abraham
Hicks. Yeah, thank you. Abraham Hicks. There you go. We were talking about Abraham Hicks, and she said, oh, yeah, that's cool. Well, I know that, but do you know Jeff Kober? I was like, no. She's like, you got to read Jeff Kober. So that's who's on the show. This man is so awesome. I didn't even know he was an actor, but his readings are incredible, and you can pick up – I get this daily email from you. You can pick up his quest for knowledge because you have read some literature, dude, and you quote it and you bring it in. You get really into the Vedic philosophies, mm-hmm. which I love. They really speak to me. And you talk about little hints of recovery. You know, I don't think in there you really say that I'm sober that I've ever noticed, but you hint at like some of those philosophies as well.
I express wisdom wherever I find it, and some of it comes through those readings. Yeah.
Yeah, because there's wisdom in those books too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I believe that you're sober.
I do not take mind-altering substances.
That's
true.
Yeah, that's cool. And how long has that been?
About 32 and a half years.
That's a long time without altering your mind through substances.
Especially with a mind like mine that at times has really needed some altering.
Yeah, I feel you. And I think our viewers at home go, I want to alter this thing sometimes. Yeah. the hamster gets a little crazy on that wheel, huh?
It does, yeah.
Yeah, and you've been in some movies. I was looking up some of them before the show, and wow, a lot more than I realized. I think one of the notable recent ones was Sully.
I was in Sully, yeah.
Yeah, which I got to watch. I haven't seen it yet. That just inspires me to go watch it. So I've been so excited that you're coming here because you're like somebody I look up to, and you have, I'm one of many that you've helped change their life through your emails. Do you have a statue yet? Anyway.
Yeah, no. I'm thinking no.
No, but seriously, thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. That's I'm honored by that.
Thanks. Yeah, and it's interesting how we come in to maybe search for answers in some sort of recovery world, maybe the rooms or a therapist or who knows. And it's all about us. I need something. What's wrong with me? And then so quickly the journey for many of us, like yourself, we become light workers. Not to be grandiose, but.
We become, when you've had to work your way out of what I had to work my way out of, you have to pick up some tools. And picking up those tools, the whole model of recovery is that you find these tools and then you offer them to others.
Yep.
And what ends up happening is, and you clearly know this from your work, that the only reason to be here is to give of yourself. It's not getting. And we come into recovery with the model of, I need to get enough to feel okay, and then there's not enough to make me feel okay.
Ever.
Of anything.
Anything.
And that's why there are, you know, so many different programs for so many different ways of abusing oneself in the name of trying to make me feel better.
Yeah.
And the whole system has to get turned around so that you learn how to give rather than trying to get. And
it's counterintuitive, isn't it?
It's absolutely counterintuitive. Yeah.
Yeah. Wait, I'm coming in and I can't stop doing whatever, cocaine or slamming dope, and my car's taken away, my family hates me, and you want me to go help other people? Mm. What about me?
Yeah, what about me?
Yeah.
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 And the amazing thing, though, when you get into it for a while, and I imagine you've had this experience too, is that the work that I've had to do to be able to get up in the morning and do my life without taking something,
yeah,
that work is, I believe, the reason we're in bodies. Mm-hmm. I think that doing that work is the reason I'm in a body, and if I didn't have to do the work, I wouldn't.
Let's be honest, we felt great, yeah.
Yeah, because all of life seeks to be comfortable. So, do you need me a little closer?
I don't want to be the loud one. Yeah, you're doing great.
But I'll try to match you.
Yeah, okay.
You know, all of life seeks comfort, and it's just that there are those of us who can't quite get enough of it.
Yeah.
I always have a picture of we're all born with a pile of stuff next to us,
yeah.
And some of us do our pile of stuff really early, and then start stealing off of other people's piles, uh-huh. And then eventually, you know, you go like, there's not enough piles, and you have to stop.
Yeah, I can relate to that. It's I like what you said though, like. We get in this world of helping others and doing all these things. If we didn't have to do it, we would not do it. I'm not Captain Recovery. I do it for sanity.
Well, here's what happens, though. What happened for me is that I got into that model, and I started having the actual experience of giving actually does feel better than getting.
Can you believe it?
Completely. It's astonishing.
Agreed.
Just like going to, let's say, a cocktail party.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to drink, and drinking is what you do at a cocktail party.
Right.
And so you're not going to drink, and then you have to talk to these people.
Oh, man.
And you're golden.
Home
you
drink.
Can sit there and listen for an hour, and they'll just keep talking about themselves. As long as you're not trying to get something from them, they'll just keep talking, and you can actually be just really genuinely interested in almost anybody.
Yeah.
As long as you're not trying to get anything.
Yeah.
As long as you're just trying to give. And what you're giving is attention. And attention is one of the things that people lack. One of the reasons that people get high and drunk is because they just want some attention.
Yeah.
And they can't get it.
They want that connection.
You know.
And so you ask them a question, and then they talk to you for a half hour. You don't say much, and they're like, man, that Jeff guy is so nice.
He's so sweet. What? Can't believe I didn't know him before. Yeah,
man, where have you been all my life? Yeah. So cool. Let's get into your story. We like to do that. Did you know that?
I had no idea what we were going to talk
right?
about.
Right. I actually did a podcast, my friends, and it's called the No Pants Podcast. And I was like, okay, cool. And they're like, no, we really take off our pants. I was like, okay. So we're keeping our pants on, Jeff. My friend Jeremy and such. Anyhow, he's a crazy one. So I kind of like to do the, like, you know, what it was like and then when you're using and then what happened and then what life's like now. And for you, you have so much amazing stuff now. We don't need to dwell in the past too much, but I always ask people for, and everybody's different. Mm. Some people have childhood trauma and they're not alcoholics. Some people have the perfect life, quote unquote, as a child, and mm-hmm. they're just miserable.
Yeah.
For you, where do you say your story starts?
Well, I lit my first cigarette when I was 4.
Oh, wow.
So I'm thinking there was something going on there.
Yeah. Was that dad helping him out, or you just did it on
your own? It looked so good.
Wow.
And so I just took a – I was also a little firebug. I lived on a farm, so I would start fires. And then I thought, well, this – and so I lit like a butt and burned my hair, and I got, you know, smacked around.
I like fire, too.
I love fire. Mm-hmm. You know, and I was a little sugar addict from the very beginning. I started drinking as soon as I could. Because,
which is when?
Well, it's like, you know, I started apparently stealing drinks when I was 12, 13, 14, something like that.
Yeah,
got kicked out of school the first time when I was 14 for getting drunk and going to a dance. But then when I was 15.
That's in Montana.
Montana.
What year?
Small town Montana.
And they cared about drinking? They just said, get out of here.
They cared about drinking at school functions. And this was a time, this was a specific case when someone got caught and dropped a dime on everyone else, so they had to do something. They really don't. It's like drinking and driving was kind of a rite of passage in Montana. This was in the late 60s.
So that's what I was thinking. Like, they didn't seem to get strict until later, no. So I was surprised.
We didn't even have speed limits.
Yeah.
We didn't. Yeah. You know, and I got caught really drunk one night by the local sheriff, and he drove me home. So, you know.
And he knew you by your first name?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Come on, Jeff.
Yeah,
you're a little schnocker.
Get in the car. But then when I was 15, I had, you know, trauma occurred. And
Do you care to?
Well, I was involved in an accident and a boy died. Mm. And I was not
Wasn't
charged
your
with
fault?
Anything. I was driving, but you know, this boy ran out in front of me. And he was a friend of mine.
Ugh.
And a 7-year-old boy, and he died, and no one ever talked to me about it.
How old were you?
I was 15.
15, so brand new driver.
Brand new driver. Well, I'd been driving on the farm for a few years, you know, mm-hmm. but and it was the night before the championship football game that I was supposed to play in, you know, and there was it was like there was a sense of shame over the whole thing, mm-hmm. like that I had done this, and I realized it, I didn't realize until years later, but I decided at that moment that I wasn't worthy of being alive.
Right.
But I couldn't kill myself.
Right.
And now this is just all hindsight. I didn't know it at the time. I was just trying to do the right thing. And, you know, I was a good kid. I was a, you know, president of the student council, all that kind of stuff. And
on the football team.
On the football team, I was, you know, and I wasn't drinking when this happened. Mm-hmm. But I was really ostracized from the entire community.
Mm. Wow.
And,
turned on you.
Yeah, just completely. And as I said, no one ever spoke to me about this, ever.
Did people start treating you different?
Yeah, they treated me different. Oh, there's that guy. Oh, there's him. You know, so I got out of there as quickly as I could.
What city is this?
Is a town called Park City, Montana.
Park City, Montana.
Really small. Like, I graduated with 16 people. It's a small high school.
Wow.
Really small town. Everyone knows everybody, everybody's business, you know, and I ended up, you know, having to medicate myself to feel okay, to just keep breathing in and out. And I tried a few times to, you know, drive fast enough to die. And I actually went out once with a hunting and with the idea of, you know, taking my life. I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't.
Right.
But I started self-medicating. I ran away and joined the carnival.
Wow.
I dropped out of college a couple times.
Carnival?
Yeah.
What were you doing?
The Donnie Love Traveling Concession Show.
Wow.
I was selling corn dogs and hot dogs and
that's a
corn
movie on the cob. Right there. Donnie Love Concession Show.
It was something.
Man. Wow.
We did the Southern Circuit, yeah.
Wow. So when the car accident happened and you said you didn't really know, how aware were you? You felt shame. How aware were you that you kind of, that you were maybe compartmentalizing or like, how much did you know changed? You weren't aware.
I had zero psychological perspective on any of it.
Right.
I was a dumb kid. There was no internet. There was no, you know, it was a small town in Montana.
So you were reacting without realizing you're acting, right?
And I was, and to your point that some people have really good lives and become alcoholics, and some people have bad lives and don't become alcoholics. Yeah. The fact is that experience fulfilled some idea of my life that was already extant at that point. It fulfilled some, because I had a dream when I was 5-6 years old that got matched up in the aftermath of this experience.
Like almost like a deja vu then.
It was beyond a deja vu in that I had dreamed an actual experience where I had destroyed the world and the people were coming in on me. And then after this accident, I was surrounded by all these people in the rain in exactly that same configuration.
Because, dude,
I'm feeling I had destroyed the world.
I've dreamt, like, to me, I figured out some of my deja vus, I dreamt them prior. Like, I was like, I remember dreaming I had a new record of Iron Maiden and like this. And
then it happened, yeah.
So I think we dream the future. That's kind of what you're saying? Or?
Well, what the Vader would say.
Yeah, tell me.
The only reason we have a linear experience of life is so that everything doesn't happen at once. Mm. And that on the quantum level, from what I understand, which is about quantum physics, very little, but on the quantum level, I've heard there's no reason that we can remember the past but can't remember the future. That time is not a reality. Time is a construct that our mind makes up.
So we can parcel it, yeah.
And so that the Big Bang and the big collapse of the entire universe is in this moment. Oh. That creation is occurring in this moment. So if we become subtle enough, the Veda would say that time, rather than being extended in a linear fashion, is actually stacked in a level of least subtle to most subtle.
Wow.
So if you go subtly enough into consciousness, you should be able to experience whatever you want to experience. I don't have that experience, but
that is heavy.
Well, and it also speaks to the fact that we can change our experience of the past by changing our point of view on it. That is our perspective on it that causes whatever experience we're having of it today.
Right. That happens a lot in recovery.
A lot, because you actually begin to take stock of your life in a fashion that personally I was unable to do before.
Right.
Because I was 32 years old when I got sober, and it was only because it stopped working.
Yeah.
It wasn't because I thought, well, that's enough. I'm gonna set it aside. Yeah. Like, I couldn't get drunk or high anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and then I had this massive experience of myself that was just like a mess. It was like a big knotted
that's
ball.
That's your moment of clarity?
Yeah.
Well, don't give away the end of the book yet.
Oh, well, my moment of clarity was actually...
Don't tell us yet, Jeff.
Okay, I'm gonna hold off on that.
But, yeah, that's good. I love it, though. But okay, so in our linear sense of this interview...
We're going to go back to linear.
Yeah, linear thinking. It's so boring, man.
I saw Father Gregory Boyle last night. Do you know him?
I've heard the name.
He began Homeboy Industries.
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
I saw him talk last night. A brilliant storyteller.
Mm. So we want to talk with him. We want to, Rock Recovery has been trying to work with Homeboy Industries.
Oh, fantastic.
I love that. Get them all singing. Okay, so, oh man, so many things, so many tidbits. But, so we were talking about where you were in the progression, you know, And when you were drinking early, did you notice the allergy? Because I noticed if I look back to some of my early episodes, I certainly went above and beyond other people. Or for you, was it kind of average consumption?
It was Montana.
You know? Yeah.
So it was, I did notice at a certain point that it was different than a lot of my friends.
Right.
And what I really noticed was there was a certain point when I found the pocket, I found the groove, and I was able to I would drink right up to the point of this groove and then back off a little bit.
Wow.
And keep the groove going. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, then just start feeding the groove through the rest of the evening.
Yeah.
And I think that lasted for about 6 months. And then I would have the experience of like, I'm approaching the groove, and then I would be throwing up in the bushes. And I just missed that whole middle bit. It just sort of went away.
Did you miss the groove, Jeff?
Oh,
yeah, I did. Definitely missed it. Yeah. So we were starting to talk about, you know, how it was in the community, and then you joined this carnival.
Yeah.
And then where'd you go after that?
I tried college a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And there I met a woman.
Mm. Who not at the carnival.
Not at the carnival.
Was there any good dating in the carnival?
Yeah. One thing about the carnival is that everyone in the carnival had two doctors in every town. A doctor for uppers and a doctor for downers.
Whoa.
This was the early 70s. And you would go to one doctor and say, Doc, I can't get to sleep. All right, I write a script. Yeah. And then you go to another doctor and say, Doc, I just have no energy. I got this high-pressure job, and you write a script.
We laugh. Some people out there are like these sickos, but I get it's funny.
It's fantastic.
It's how it's like we were so dumb back then.
I am so glad that crank was not readily available when I was still getting high.
Yeah.
Because I didn't ruin my brain. Well, as much as I could have.
We don't have a control model to compare
no,
it to.
No, we don't.
So
my memory isn't what it once was. I know
that. Yeah. So, sorry, I keep going to the carnival. It's just fun to talk about. You tried college. Didn't work well, but you got a date.
I got a date, and she moved to L.A. to become an actress. And I followed her because college was not really working out for me.
Now, in your bio, it says that you wanted to leave Montana to go after acting. Is it really you wanted to follow the girl? And
Yeah, I wasn't an actor. The acting was
IMDb had it wrong.
Oh, wow. I should check that out.
Yeah.
It
makes you sound so ambitious.
I never Google myself. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
No, I was not an actor when I got here.
So you just followed the girl. She wanted to be an actor.
She wanted to be an actor, but she was on some spectrum. She was a very strange but beautiful individual.
I like that's a nice way to put it. On
yeah.
a spectrum, we won't say
yeah,
which.
I don't know which
one,
but she was on one of them.
I'm gonna use that.
Thank you. Yeah. You're welcome to it.
Yeah, thank you.
And you know, that ended badly because I was not capable of forming any kind of a meaningful relationship with anyone because I didn't have one with myself. And I certainly didn't have one with any sense of God. My experience of God was, you stay over there, I'll stay over here and keep torturing myself so that you don't have to get involved. And
you're saying this to God.
Yeah, I'm saying this to God.
Like, I'm a bad boy, just don't watch.
Clearly I'm bad, and I understand that, and I've got it handled.
That probably happened from the accident, a lot of it.
Yeah, a lot of it.
Some people just get it from, say, Catholicism or whatever, if they're indoctrinated with shame and guilt from some religious practice. But you had an event. So how was your drinking at the time with the girl? Was it pretty heavy and consistent?
It was medicinal. It was, you know, it was, I smoked a lot of pot.
Right.
I drank nearly every day.
Yeah.
And then when she was gone, then I became a cab driver in L.A. And I was, I would get some money and I would buy enough stuff
right.
to get me through the next night. And, you know, I would, whenever I got a chunk of money, I would buy enough stuff and then worry about paying my bills.
Priorities, man.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just sort of, you know, it was like a really hand-to-mouth existence.
Yeah. I get that. Yeah. That's what we do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, cool. Let's take a little break here and go to your first song, which is, do we know, do you remember which one it was? I should read.
Is it Rage Against the Machine? Yeah.
I love that you picked Rage Against the Machine. Now, why did you pick this song?
Well, it was supposed to be representative of what it was like to be me before I stopped drinking.
Yeah.
This is kind of what the inside of my head sounded like all the time.
There we go. So I got to do now. I got to be a professional radio guy. We're here with Jeff Kober, my amazing new friend, old friend, whatever, friend. He's rad. On Rock to Recovery Radio, this is Wes Skier, KX93.5 FM and Rage Against the Machine. This is what Jeff Kober's brain sounds like when he was getting loaded. Jeff Kober's mind when he was out there getting crazy. That's what his the inside of his brain sounded like. We're sitting here with amazing human, actor, writer, Vedic meditation
teacher.
Do you say guru?
No, I don't.
No, we don't like that. It's too grandiose, maybe?
Yeah, it's not a title you want to throw on. It's way too much responsibility.
I love it. And this is Rock to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, Wes Skier, KX93.5 FM, Laguna's only FM, and also brought to you by New Vista Behavioral Health. So, people are teaching me the ways of the radio. I got to go back. Last episode, right?
Okay.
So we're sitting here with Jeff. He's talking about growing up in Montana and drinking as Montanians do, and a tragedy that happened when you're behind the wheel and lost a friend who was 7, and the shame and guilt you had surrounding that, joining the carnival, which had a cool name.
The Donnie Love Traveling Concession Show.
The Donnie Love Traveling. Don't you guys at home just want to fill out an application for that right now?
Right.
And then you followed a woman to California. She wanted to act. You didn't. But the relationship didn't work out.
Right.
And you went into driving a cab. And at this time, your CAB earnings were going primarily to getting your head right.
That's right. And somewhere in there, I actually worked in an office for 1 year. It was for the Getty Oil Company. This is the Getty's got all their money from an oil company.
Yeah.
And I was working as a temporary paralegal. And my whole life had fallen apart. I was actually in a band for a moment called Walking Wounded. I was the bass player, not a very good one. That had fallen apart. And I was with all these renegade people who were temporary paralegals in this office. And I remember that in college, the one thing that college was that it made sense. You went to a class, you learned something, you took a test, you got a grade. Mm-hmm. That made sense.
Yeah.
And so I thought, I guess I need to go to a class.
Yeah.
And this woman said, I go to an acting class. I think you'd like it. Come with me. And so I went to this acting class, and suddenly all the stuff that was stuck inside of me, they were asking me to bring it out.
Wow.
And that made sense to me. And that
really?
was like, you know, it was like when I was in high school, I weighed, you know, 225. Football made sense. You ran over people.
Yeah.
And, you know, you hit
them.
Yeah, I was a big dude, and there were a lot of small dudes. And I could
if
run
you're
over,
225
you know,
in high school, you're dominating some people.
So this was the same thing. Like, I had so many emotions inside that I'd been pushing down for all those years. And, you know, and they were saying, no, bring them out, bring them out. And so that's when I started down the road of acting. However, this was when my drinking and using accelerated a bit, because I had to start feeling the way it felt to be me and bringing that to the equation rather than just pushing it all aside. And so then I would not drink, not use for a day so that I could act. And then as soon as I was done, I would rush to the bar and, drink.
Wow. So in a way, you were being forced to deal with some of those old emotions. When they would come up, you're like, ooh.
Yeah, and discovering emotions for the first time ever. I never had words for these things. It was just a mess I didn't want to look at. And suddenly now I had to start looking at the mess. Started to have to unravel this ball of emotions and see, oh, that's anger. Oh, that's fear. Oh, that's shame. Oh, that's guilt.
That's such an interesting take on acting that there, you know, we talk about it because we do process groups and workshops, and we always talk about opening people up, and you don't want to leave them that way. And we're cognizant of that. Hey, we're getting you to dig deep, but don't abandon people when they're there. But acting class is kind of like that, right? They're having you dig up the stuff to use it, but they're not going, hey.
Yeah, there's no babysitting after the fact.
Whoa.
No, it's just like, see you next week.
Do people lose it from acting classes because they pull up traumas they haven't dealt with? It seems it could happen.
Yeah, and people quit. You know, it's a lot of people that I started out with aren't doing it anymore.
Wow. So. Ah, insane. So you're driving a cab and doing acting?
Driving a cab, studying acting, you know, doing a few plays here and there. Looking for a paying gig, you know, just trying to make a living at that, because I didn't know how to do anything else.
Yeah.
I'm a farmer. I wasn't really a good farmer either. And I wasn't a terribly good cab driver either.
You didn't come out to Cali and just grow.
But I was able to drive while I was high. So that's a skill.
Doesn't everybody think that I'm a better driver when I'm high, man?
You say I was better.
Oh,
I just said I could drive.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. I think there's a lot of people with DUIs out there going, I'm better drunk. I don't know why you're writing me up, you know. So what was the next phase of it getting bad? What came first? Did you get some acting success?
This is interesting. At least it is to me. I went from cab driving to bartending, and I bartended for a while, which was great because
you
I could drink
it.
For free.
Yeah.
And then I ended up quitting the bar because they didn't treat me properly, and I said, I'm going to make it as an actor. And in this 6-month period, I went from a small job acting to a bigger job acting to a really big job, television job, acting, to getting a movie, third lead in a Columbia feature. Mm. And I had this, as it turns out, naive belief that if I got this job, it would fix
acting
me.
Job.
This acting job that, like, that yeah. where I could say, ah, I did something.
Yeah.
If I got this job, it would fix me inside and it would make things feel differently.
So you felt like there's something wrong.
Yeah, there's something wrong. This is wrong. This is clearly wrong.
Yeah.
And
that's why you couldn't hang out with God, because you're
right. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And a woman didn't fix it, and nothing else really fixed it. It just allowed me to keep moving forward. But then I got this job, and I asked the guys, you know, I had done a couple of tests, and I said, so what's the deal? Do I have the job or not? And I actually went inside to watch the inside of my head change when I heard I was going to get the job.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, yeah, yeah, you're the guy. And I was watching the inside of my head, and nothing happened.
Really?
And I was like, oh, my God. So hope disappeared. The hope that if I just got this job, I'd be okay, suddenly disappeared. And I went out that night and tried to get drunk, and I couldn't.
Whoa. So drinking had progressed.
Drinking had progressed, and the fact that this was such a traumatic event to get this job and not be fixed, that I could no longer get high, and I smoked some crack. I drank a bunch of whiskey, and nothing changed.
Had you smoked crack before?
I had, though I had said I would never do something like that.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah.
But in a cab.
Did you smoke crack and drive a cab?
Well, yeah.
Didn't everybody? Oh, my God. I love you.
It was, It was. There was a working girl.
Okay.
I picked up at 8. It was the first time I smoked crack. I picked her up at 8 a.m. From a West Hollywood, where apparently you lived at one point.
Yeah.
And she got in the backseat of the cab and just took off her wig and said, damn, man, you want to smoke some crack? I said, yeah.
And duh.
We pulled over, and she got in the front seat, and we smoked some crack. And I just fell over in her lap and said, I love you. And
to the crack or to her?
To her. I was loving the crack, but she had given it to me, so yeah. I bonded. It's like if a duck is born when a dog's walking by, he follows the dog.
I like that.
She pushed me off her lap, and I took her home, and then the crack became part of my toolkit.
The aforementioned toolkit, yeah.
Yeah.
So circling back, though, because I think there's a lot of people that listen to the show that are searching for answers, and maybe they say, like, well, I'm not an actor, I can't relate. But the similarity here for a lot of people is we think getting that certain job, or maybe getting pregnant, or
getting enough money, or getting the right guy, the right girl, the right something is going to fix it. And number one, I'm not broken.
Right.
So you can't fix something that isn't broken. What really was going on was that it was so uncomfortable to be in my body because of these feelings. And the stories I told myself about these feelings, that was the only game in town, was these stories and these feelings. And the stories I told myself were all dark and negative.
Yeah. Yeah.
And all I could do was shut the system down. So
By getting loaded. Yeah.
Then when that stops working, then I ended up having to stop.
You're really screwed.
So then you're like, you still have the problem.
Yeah.
But you no longer have the medicine.
The solution doesn't work anymore. Yeah. Our solution, right?
Yeah, that solution no longer works.
And that's when it gets dark for a lot of us.
Yeah.
Because then we keep using, like for me, I was using massive amounts, and now I'm just and snatching them, and I can't get the relief, and then you're just super.
No click. You can't get the click.
It's such a bummer. Yeah. I totally relate to that. Yeah. I totally relate to that. So I think you alluded to this. You couldn't get, and you said that it didn't work anymore, but you had kind of like a epiphany, a moment of clarity?
I was.
And really quick. Don't we get to know, like, your first acting job, the first?
Oh, well, the first one was, it was like a day job on, it was It was like an alien show.
Cool.
You know, and I played an alien. And then
I remember that.
I got a really nice part on this show called Remington Steel.
Yeah.
With Stephanie Zimbalist and Pierce Brosnan,
mm-hmm.
where I got to be a cowboy and chew tobacco and talk to Stephanie Zimbalist a little bit.
Nice.
A pretty little thing.
And that was easy for you to tap into
Yeah, very easy.
Oh.
And then I got this two-part Highway to Heaven with Michael. This is embarrassing. Little Joe from Bonanza.
Yeah, I can see his face.
Yeah,
but.
Michael Landon.
Michael Landon.
And Victor French was the director, and I got this really great job of being this guy called the Monster, who had been excised from his community because he had a big birthmark. And he lived by himself in shame and guilt for being who he was. And then this blind girl can't see his birthmark, so she treats him good and falls in love with him. So he's saved by that.
I mean, metaphorically, that's your story.
Yeah, it's my story, yeah.
Yeah, and then you went to California.
And yeah,
right?
Yeah. And so I did that, and then I got this this big movie, at least it was big to me, which was called Out of Bounds with Anthony Michael Hall.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was supposed to be his becoming an adult movie.
Gotcha. That's cool. Yeah. Because I get it. You didn't name it, like, you know, but, you know, people at home, they're going to start watching that stuff now. Yeah, that's cool.
Very, very 80s.
I dig it.
Yeah.
And then there's other people going, man, I've been trying to get a part my whole life. This guy didn't even want it. And he gets all this stuff. Dang it.
Yeah, kind of like that. Yeah.
I remember we had a guy on tour we went out on tour, my old band, Head PE. We had this roadie guy. He had a cool deep voice. He was doing some backup rapping with us. He made friends with Tommy Lee. All of us in our band, Head PE, had struggled for years just to get to a motorhome and Motley Crue. He makes friends with Tommy Lee. Next thing you know, he's in a video with Tommy Lee doing a record with Stephen Perkins. It's like, dude, you have it. You know what I mean?
That's
he just got it so easy. And we were like, good for you, T-Lo. T-Lo, if you're hearing this, stoked for you, bro, but we are a little bitter. You can see
just
why.
Just a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was George Clinton. There was all these stars on there. And anyhow, when you're on meth, you get really jealous of people. So, but let's not talk about me. So you had this, it wasn't working for you.
It wasn't working.
And so how did you stop? How'd you stay stopped? What'd you do? And you were you miserable in the beginning?
Oh, God, yeah. I thought this was a really bad idea. I need a drink. That's what I thought.
I got to quit quitting, yeah.
Yeah, and then I ran into somebody who hadn't been drinking for a while and, you know, started talking to them and started finding out that there's certain things that you need to do if you're going to stay stopped.
So they had a plan.
They had a plan, and the plan involved finding a way to look at yourself. For real,
mm-hmm.
to see who you actually were and to accept who you actually were,
mm-hmm.
and then to find a way of awakening yourself to what you are that is other than your thoughts and your feelings.
Right.
And to have what they call a spiritual awakening.
Mm-hmm.
The spirit of someone is not, it's not some woo-woo thing. It's the essence of what you are. It's the thing
exactly.
that's deeper than your thoughts and your feelings. It's the thing that never changes. Once you discover that that's what you are, all sorts of different things happen. Number one, for someone like me, I began to be able to recognize that I'm not my thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have to change it in order to be okay. I can be okay no matter what my head is telling me. So I started being able to see my head as like a really angry four-year-old. And I would never let the four-year-old drive.
Yeah, okay, gotcha, yeah.
You know, I have a friend who said, yeah, he can get in the back of the car, but he doesn't even get to decide what's on the radio. He's certainly not going to drive. And he just yammers all the time. And every once in a while, a four-year-old says something you have to deal with. But most of what the four-year-old says, you just go, yeah, that's good, that's cool, yeah.
Right.
You know, and what also happens when you have that spiritual awakening is you find that when you know yourself that deeply, when you've been able to dig through the layers of garbage, that place, you don't need anything from anyone else. You don't need anything from a job. Or it is fulfillment itself on that deepest level. It's you there. Are able to be happy. You are able to feel okay just being. Mm-hmm. So you get to stop trying to get it from somewhere else, and you're no longer at the mercy of that at the mercy of your need for alcohol. You know, Carl Jung talked about the fact that someone who is an alcoholic is seeking in the bottle some small experience of an actual spiritual awakening. And that it's not by accident that in Latin, the word for God and the word for alcohol are the same, spirit.
Yeah, they call it spirits,
spirits.
Right?
Yeah,
wine
spiritus
spirits.
In Latin, yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of great stuff there. The great irony is that, well, you're talking about your head and your thinking was your problem, and then suddenly, or I don't know that it was suddenly, actually. I want to get into how you got there. For a lot of us, I use the metaphor, it's like you were calling a four-year-old. I call it like a horse. My whole life, I'm on this wild horse, and it's dry. It's going crazy, bucking and flying all around, and I'm not liking it. And then I started meditating, and I learned to become the observer of my thoughts, and that's when the moment when I go, wait, I don't even have to ride this horse. Or I can actually take the reins and control it. Son of a gun. I wish I knew that.
Yeah. Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
I like
that
very much.
How did you – I mean, it doesn't just happen. Like, you made it sound easy.
Well, but this was years of different kinds of meditation. And frankly, I was so locked into an experience of not okayness, an experience of shame.
Yeah.
You know, shame is an experience that tells you you're not okay. Mm-hmm. And I was so locked into that experience of shame that even though I hadn't had a drink for many years and practiced different forms of mindfulness and things on a daily basis, I still wasn't feeling that good about myself.
So how many years are we talking when you're still
17 years?
17 years still
of not drinking, but and working a spiritual program, mm-hmm. but still not feeling that good. And then I discovered, was given a meditation that allowed me to transcend my experience of myself. And the transcendence takes you to a place that has never been touched by anything that's happened in your life, anything you've done, anything that's been done to you. There's a place where each of us is perfect, pure, whole, and complete. And when you start to know yourself as that, then the deepest experiences out here begin to unwind, and you begin to be able to bring that into the world and see that in others, because what it is in me is the same as what it is in you. It's no different. And I don't have to find compassion for you. I just have to know you're me, and whatever is coming from you that isn't that is just your ego, your animal nature, and it'll pass, and I don't have to worry about it.
I love it. I'm totally with you. I'm wondering, because I have these conversations with my friends or people who aren't as into meditation or whatever as I am. Not that I'm a, quote, guru at all. But sometimes when we get in these conversations, it can be like, right on, man. Cool. I have no idea what you're talking about. It's a little bit esoteric, you know?
Well,
So you were reading a lot of books.
I read a lot. You know, I used to read Nietzsche all the time, because Nietzsche tried to come up with a way of looking at life and the pain of life without God. That was his whole thing. You know, God is dead. He died of pity for man. That's, you know, big Nietzschean quote. Mm-hmm. But Nietzsche suffered from these massive migraines, and he would have to take opiates to deal with them. But he was brilliant. Mm-hmm. And so that made sense to me. Dark, brilliant, Lutheran is just is
yeah.
right where I, that's my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
And the opium, too. But then I read a lot. But I was trying to fix my brain as if fixing my brain would fix me.
Yeah.
But I'm not my thinking.
Yeah.
I'm just not. It's like gauging how I'm doing by how my thoughts are doing is like deciding which car is the fastest based upon the paint job.
Yeah.
It just has no bearing on it.
It doesn't. You know, and what I like to bring up is like when people struggle with mental health or when You know, a lot of people say when I don't use, I'm bored or I hate how I feel.
Mm, yeah.
It's that restless, irritable discontent. A wise person shared once that if you have a drinking or drug problem, you can quit and your problem's handled. But if you're like me, where it's really my thinking,
yeah,
I quit and now I'm stuck with the problem. Yeah. Right.
Well, and so what I have found mm-hmm. is that there is a model of recovery which involves getting in touch with the truth of what you are, working on a daily basis to through prayer and meditation to improve your connection with that deepest
yeah.
experience of what you are, then pointing yourself outward and being of service, giving of yourself to someone else. And what you're creating in that formula is a flow of life. And what it gives you is an experience of yourself as a process rather than a product.
Mm.
And once I'm a process, it's nudging the process this way or that way. It's not about fixing me so that I'll be okay. Because discomfort when sitting still turns into the joy of living when put into service. You have to be able and willing to feel that level of discomfort to be open enough to feel the way that life is meant to be felt, which is free, full, and alive and joyful.
Steve.
But you can't do that sitting still. You got to do that in motion. And the only motion that brings you to that experience is the experience that is the motion of service, the motion outward of energy and love to another. And what the Veda says is that's why we're here, is to have that experience.
I believe it. Yeah. I think we should throw in the song really fast. I don't want to. How long is it?
Well, we got two.
No, we're just going to do the last one.
Yeah, let's do the last one. Inara George.
Yeah.
3 minutes.
What is it?
It's Inara George.
Inara George.
Lowell George's daughter. He was one of the founders of Little Feet.
Love it.
And she's a LA-based artist. This is from her most recent album.
All right. I'm not sure how long it is, but we're going to have to come back and wrap up. It's three? Oh, this is going to be great. All right. So here we are with Jeff Kober, the amazing Vedic meditation teacher, actor, rad human, on Rock to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, Wes Geer, KX93.5 FM. We will be right back after Inara
George.
Yeah.
Was the daughter of my father. I was the color of a half-lit moon riding down sunset, making records at night. There's a calling in my gut, and I have to just follow it. I was a girl in New York City, collecting stories like I'm saving money, just hanging on the wall. We didn't care at all, 'cause caring meant that we weren't invincible. Where is the line between all this joy and all this something strong and hot with our wine-stained teeth and some dirty little habits. I would never change a thing, just the way I got out of bed. Where is the line between all this joy and all this
Say her name again.
Inara George. That is such a happy song.
I'm like, yeah, that felt good. And honestly, I didn't listen. We were talking. So here we are on Rock to Recovery Radio, KX93.5 FM. We're with Jeff Kober, ex-Montanian cab driver, whatever that.
Carney.
Carney, yeah, thank you. The coolest Carney name ever. Actor, many films and cool episodes. And now, do you call yourself a recovered alcoholic, or you just say you don't use those names, or?
Yeah, I don't use.
Yeah, okay.
They're labels.
Okay,
Yeah.
Then you're framing yourself, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I get with that. But you're sober. You haven't altered your mind with a chemical.
Altered my mind with a chemical in 32 years.
I like that you do it that way.
Yeah
okay. And when you get sober for 17 years, even working with spiritual practices, you're still miserable.
And by and large, a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But I had a really big hole to dig my way out of,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I really like to make that clear that it's, you know, a lot of people, they stop drinking and suddenly things start to line up.
Mm.
But I had, there was a whole movement years ago in the 80s by this guy who wrote about healing the shame that binds you, mm. and that those of us who have been shamed about life, every feeling we get is accompanied with shame. And shame tells you you're not okay to be alive. And I lived that way for many, many, many years.
Even sober.
Because it's a system that needs to be taken apart.
Right.
I didn't know how to take it apart.
Which is based in thinking.
Which uses the thinking to keep you in the system. Mm-hmm. Because it's got to it's like, of course you don't deserve to have a happy life. You don't deserve to be happy.
Yeah.
I feel bad. Of course you feel bad. You are bad. Here's how you are bad. Mm-hmm. You know.
Let me list the ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you found Vedic meditation. That was the key. And that let you release thinking and become the observer of your thoughts.
Become the observer of my thoughts. And maybe even more to the point, it allows the shame system to begin to come apart. It helps you release the stresses that have been built into your system. And they start to actually flow out of your system so that then you can build a new system in their place.
And, you know, they say a full cup receives no water, however that goes. But
right.
if you're full of shame, you can't receive goodness either.
That's very good.
Oh, all right. Yeah.
Thank you.
That's not bad, huh? I should write that down. No, I'm just kidding. Are you still acting?
Yeah, you just did something. I was just on, five or six episodes of NCIS Los Angeles working with Academy Award winner Linda Hunt.
Nice.
That was fantastic.
And cool.
Yeah. Got a movie out on iTunes right now called Beauty Mark, which won several awards at film festivals, and another one coming out called Block Island, which just opened and closed the Soho Film Festival, and a movie that I wrote and acted in and did the photography for. It was about a photographer and a woman that he has a thing with called Either Exposure or Pornography. We just finished shooting that and with Leslie Hope and
crushing it.
Yeah, it's very cool. Yeah.
Well, listen, thanks so much for coming down here.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. What a pleasure.
Oh, man, it was so fun. Can we hang out sometime?
I would love that.
Yeah, I'd love it too. The last thing I want to make sure we touch on is Jeff has an amazing email that you can get automatically sent to your email inbox about Vedic meditation and a bunch of great principles that helped you have a happy, joyous, and free life.
And the whole point of the daily email is if you read it all the way through, you are meant to feel better at the end of it than you did at the beginning. That's the whole point of it.
There you go.
That's my intention. And if you go to jeffkobermeditation.com, there's a button right on the front page to sign up for it. There's also information there about intro talks for learning meditation.
Sweet. Yeah, Kober, K-O-B-E-R. You've definitely helped change and shape my life. I friggin' love you. Thanks for coming down. And he's available to teach you meditation, too. You can go visit him, and you'll show the...
Absolutely. I'll show you the the ropes.
It's basically transcendental meditation without the branding of that.
Similar. We call it Vedic meditation,
right?
Because...
But for people at home,
yes,
it's similar.
It comes from a common source, as transcendental meditation comes from, yes.
Because everybody knows that version, so they kind of go that. But Jeff Cover, he'll show you the way. Well, Jeff, I love you. Thanks for your time. Rock to Recovery Radio, KX935.com. This is Wes Gear, and we're out of here.